Professor Christoph, what do you say to those who say it's simply alarmist to be talking about 4 degrees of global warming, twice the level that world leaders have identified as dangerous and are working to keep below?
Well, 2 years ago or 4 years ago, it would have been regarded as science fiction to think about a world heading in that direction. But frankly, given the pace of negotiations and the projections that are being made on current levels of emissions and also projected changes to those emissions, 4 degrees is pretty much about the centre figure that is being projected by the IPCC, the international body, the scientific body looking at climate change. So 4 degrees, unfortunately, is now a very realistic prospect by the end of this century.
You say we should use the best available evidence. What does it tell us about the earliest possible date we'd be looking at a 4 degree warmer world?
Well, a great deal depends on the rate at which emissions either increase or decline. At the moment, they're continuing to increase. We're hoping that the commitments that have come through from industrialised countries in the last few years and prospectively coming through from the major industrialising countries will see a decline in those emissions. If those emissions increase, then we're looking at 4 degrees being hit perhaps as early as 2070. If they decline, but not sufficiently, then we're looking at around the end of this century. Of course, that doesn't mean that that's when the warming stops. Warming would continue to occur for some time, for some centuries after that. But at this stage, that's the projection that we're looking at.
The planet has warmed only about 0.8 of a degree since the Industrial Revolution. The latest IPCC report shows the pace of warming has actually stabilised in recent years. Isn't this just too extreme an analysis to be taken seriously?
Look, the stabilisation that has occurred at the moment is regarded by most climate scientists as temporary. These sort of projections that we're now looking at at the moment are not alarmist at all. I think they're actually probably conservative under the circumstances. They don't factor in a number of other feedbacks which may occur as warming continues and as we move past certain tipping points.
So if this 4 degrees of warming or worse were to take place, which parts of the globe, which populations would be most at risk?
You'd probably have to say that most parts of the globe would be at risk. That's 4 degrees of average warming, but there would be warming that is in excess of that as you move towards the polar regions in both hemispheres. You've got to say that Australia, as a country which has always had a fairly fragile environment, would be one of the continents and one of the countries most at risk. Certainly it's the most vulnerable of the industrialised countries. But then you have continents like the subcontinent, the Indian subcontinent, and also China, which are very vulnerable and because of their large populations are extremely susceptible to changes in drought and therefore in food availability.
What is the most frightening aspect for you of a 4 degree warmer world?
Oh, look, that's a terrible question to which one only has to give a terrible answer. There are a set of compounding problems that emerge when you start moving towards 4 degrees. You start to see a world in which there are substantial extinctions. The oceans have become warmer, are becoming more acidic, so there's a very significant chance of the collapse of significant marine ecosystems like coral reefs. The Great Barrier Reef, for example, is probably doomed when you get to 4 degrees. There are very substantial problems with food availability planet-wide, and in a country like Australia, which used to be capable of producing a surplus of food, by 4 degrees would probably be facing food security problems with a larger population, but also a hungrier population. And then you have the issues of extreme weather events, floods, more intense storms, bushfires. All of these things, particularly in the Australian context, I think leave us with a shatteringly different sense of what Australia can and would be like.
The IPCC has been criticised in the past for exaggerating effects, like sea level rises, for example. In your book, you talk about 65 metres. That's almost unimaginable, isn't it?
That's the very long-term prospect. At 4 degrees, the last time the planet was at 4 degrees was about 10 million years ago during the Miocene, and then the sea levels were somewhere between 65 and 100 metres higher. Now, it would take many thousands of years for the polar caps to melt and for sea levels to rise to that level. But we are looking at the prospect of a sea level rise of a metre by the end of this century if we are going to have this sort of warming. And even a metre's sea level rise would lead to massive displacements of population in the Asia-Pacific region. Low-lying countries like Bangladesh, for example, very substantial coastal cities in places like Indonesia and in China would all suffer significant problems. And so you'd see really substantial displacements of population and significant effects well before you get to those extraordinarily high levels that you mentioned.
The physical effects are one part of this. What could the changes in the resource availability then mean for security? Will it inevitably mean more wars?
The projections are at 4 degrees that you would have significant displacements of population. If you have mass hunger occurring, populations will move to try and find food. Most of those movements, and you know, the projections go from 65 to 250 million people by the end of the century. Most of those movements are likely to occur within countries, but there would be also the prospect of people moving over their borders and looking for resources elsewhere. And how the world begins to handle a problem of that magnitude, I think, is something that we can only begin to contemplate. One doesn't know whether it would lead to more conflict. It certainly would lead to problems. I don't think we can understand what a world that looks like the one that's being projected looks like, or how we're going to react to it. It's beyond human experience.
This sounds like a doomsday scenario. Could humans adapt to a 4-degree warming of the planet?
Well, humans are an extraordinarily adaptable species, but if you're looking at a population of 7 billion people trying to adapt to a world in which there's less water and less food, one would have to say that the prospects for an adaptation that would leave life looking roughly like it does for many people at this point in time is virtually impossible. So there are already billions of people living in poverty or in water-stressed and food-stressed circumstances in a 4-degree world. Their situation would only get extremely worse. And even in extremely wealthy countries like Australia, adaptation, I think, would be very, very difficult to countenance. There would clearly be some form of adaptation, but it wouldn't be life as we understand it at this point in time.
You say that Australia could be one of the most vulnerable continents. Where do you expect to see the worst effects in Australia of a 4-degree warmer world?
There will be the extinctions of species. There'll be a very substantial impact on agricultural productivity, so issues of food availability will change. We probably have the wealth and the resources to begin to deal with some of the issues of water availability and desalinisation plants and so on. Everyday life will be very substantially different. I mean, there are projections, for example, of what would happen to just average temperatures over time. So in Melbourne, for example, we currently see we have something like 9 or 10 days over 35 degrees at the moment. By the time you get to 2070, that's about 26 days. When you're looking at Alice Springs, the temperature is 90 days over 35 degrees now, 180 by 2070. And then you get to places like Darwin, which would move from 11 days to 308. You end up with parts of Australia which are virtually unlivable. And the projections are, for example, that while Alice Springs would resemble the Sudan, Darwin would resemble like no place on Earth.
What of the arguments that Australia's always been a continent of extremes?
What I think we're going to see, though, is an intensification of those. That's what climate scientists are now trying to explain, that you see that extremes in terms of floods and fires and droughts and so on will become intensified and they'll occur more frequently and their impacts, therefore, will be greater.
What action would you like to see from policymakers as a result of your report?
The clearest thing that this report suggests is that our current settings, which will lead to a 4-degree world, that our current targets and our current policies are inadequate. So Australia's committed to reducing its emissions by 5 degrees below 2000 levels. That's a dangerously inappropriate target when you're looking at the climate implications, the ethical implications, the economic and social implications for Australia. We need to look at a much more substantial target, around 45% below 2000 levels by 2020.
To go from 5% to 45%, though, that's a massive increase. Do you really expect the current government to take something like that seriously?
Well, clearly there's a huge gap between our current political settings and what the science is suggesting we need to do. But at the end of the day, if you look at the economic, the social and environmental outcomes, there has to be a bit of a reality check, and I think that nature is going to give us that. It's not impossible for us to actually achieve targets as steep as that. It just involves a much more substantial economic investment.
A 45% reduction, what would be the cost of bringing that about? I mean, British economist Nicola Stern's analysis that it would cost 1% of GDP globally is now well out of date, isn't it?
It is out of date, but it's not that far off what one could still expect at this point in time. Look, given the price of carbon credits internationally, if we were to buy carbon credits from overseas markets to compensate for what we may not be able to do domestically. We could perhaps reduce our emissions by 25% in Australia and buy credits in the short term to bring our overall reduction up to 40% by 2020, at the same time as investing very heavily in a transition to renewable energies. We're talking about billions of dollars, but in terms of the amount of money that is currently spent within the budget on education or defence and so on, it certainly wouldn't be a dramatic tension for the budget to be reoriented towards dealing with this problem.
How optimistic are you, though, that this might happen? I mean, have you had meetings with the new Environment Minister?
Not yet. We're hoping to take this book and the reports that will spring from it to him and to brief him and also other cabinet ministers and also other parliamentarians in the hope that there will be at least some dialogue around these problems. The Climate Change Authority has recommended changes in targets, not quite as dramatic as the ones that I'm suggesting, but overall we're hoping that this will contribute to a change in the tone and the change in the content of the dialogue around where Australia needs to go.
Peter Christoph, as we've been going through this conversation, you're reeling off statistics that really are quite extraordinary. How worried are you really that we could actually reach 4 degrees of warming?
Extremely worried. We haven't seen the sort of focus and we haven't seen the sort of effort that's required to avoid exceeding 2 degrees in international negotiations, nor in Australia for some time. And I think that under the circumstances, unless there is a change in pace and a change in orientation in our discussion, I think that the likelihood is that we will head towards 4 degrees, or more precisely that in 10 or 20 years' time we'll start to panic and start to really begin to move very, very quickly to reduce emissions. But under those circumstances, it'll be a much more expensive and probably much less effective set of policies that we put in place.
Professor Christoph, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Eleanor.
And for depressing the audience so much.